ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय टुडे फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 10 entitled Deliverance of the Yamal Arjuna Trees, text 13. Please repeat after me. असत श्रीमदान्तस्य दारिद्र्यं परम अञ्जनम् आत्मोपमयेन भूतानि दरिद्र परम इक्षते. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: Atheistic fools and rascals who are very much proud of wealth fail to see things as they are. Therefore, returning them to poverty is the proper ointment for their eyes, so they may see things as they are. At least a poverty-stricken man can realize how painful poverty is, and therefore he will not want others to be in a painful condition like his own. Purport: Even today, if a man who was formerly poverty-stricken gets money, he is inclined to utilize his money to perform many philanthropic activities like opening schools for uneducated men and hospitals for the diseased. In this connection, there is an instructive story called Punar Mushiko Bhava, again become a mouse. A mouse was very much harassed by a cat, and therefore the mouse approached a saintly person to request to become a cat. When the mouse became a cat, he was harassed by a dog, and then when he became a dog, he was harassed by a tiger. But when he became a tiger, he stared at the saintly person, and when the saintly person asked him, "What do you want?" the tiger said, "I want to eat you." Then the saintly person cursed him, saying, "May you again become a mouse." A similar thing is going on all over the universe. One is going up and down, sometimes becoming a mouse, sometimes a tiger, and so on. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Brahmand Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva, Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Beej." Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela 19.151. The living entities are promoted and degraded by the laws of nature. But if one is very, very fortunate, by association with saintly persons, he gets the seed of devotional service and his life becomes successful. Narad Muni wanted to bring Nalakuvar and Manigrive to the platform of devotional service through poverty, and thus he cursed them. Such is the mercy of a Vaishnav. Unless one is brought to the Vaishnav platform, one cannot be a good man. Harav Abhaktasya Kuto Mahat Guna. Bhagavatam 5.18.12. An Avaishnav never becomes a good man, however severely he is punished. Om Ajnan Timirandasa Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmitamena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So Narad Muni's very powerful and hard-hitting, I would say, words of wisdom are carrying on when he is when he talks about here. He talks about atheistic fools and rascals. Now, actually, a foolish person is someone who has less intelligent. That's what we understand, that he's perhaps it doesn't attribute to bad motives. Well, when we talk of rascals, Rascal means someone who is maliciously mischievous, who is actually whose intentions would be questioned, whose motivation would be questioned. So basically he covers all. What he means is that anyone who is in pursuit of wealth blindly, eventually through that sense gratification, he becomes very much developing the tendencies of atheism. Even if we are nominally religious, because eventually the battle is really between, for a person who is going for sense gratification, the battle is between ultimately me and all those that surround me, and he doesn't want to listen to anything about the Lord eventually. So the battle is between him and the Lord, because ultimately he may not realize it or he may not admit it. He may even carry out the norms that are there, and he may even satisfy himself, you know, going to the temple, perhaps doing this charity. But it pleases his ego. He does it because it is him. He wants to have the happiness and bliss of the spiritual life, which we get in spiritual life, but without Krishna. That's the difference. So, because accepting Krishna automatically means accepting the whole, it's a paradigm shift of understanding that Krishna is, that means there's a controller for everything. Our thought, word, activities, deed. And accepting that means we have to understand what he wants. And through that, we have to modify our whole approach, not just for a moment or a day, but forever. I mean, so, if we do not understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, it could be frightening. That saying that nobody would like to even change for a time, for a short time. A minor adjustment also is difficult. Today's world, even if your in-laws are coming to stay for 2 days, you find it very difficult. Imagine, now we are talking of a lifetime change, and that too complete. So it can only be based on proper understanding through the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So Narad Muni is giving these words of wisdom, and what is he saying? He's saying that the accumulation of wealth is really ultimately causing all the problems. In a few verses ago, he also mentioned that it is basically the tendency to or the desire to accumulate wealth, which is actually more than any other attachments. So he puts it at the biggest single obstacle or the biggest challenge. Now we also hear that that, you know, on an individual basis, the sex drive is the biggest source of bondage, which is a fact. That because that is the puts us on the most gross level, bodily level. The uncontrolled sex acts, which is not subject to Krishna's laws. But ultimately, in today's world, if you see the pursuit of wealth, is because through that, all the power, all the prestige, say today, world over, the governments are controlled, or whoever wins elections, whatever system of governance they have, eventually need huge amounts of money. We all know that. The legitimate, illegitimate part is depending on one's viewpoint or one's the present system. For the last 100, 200 years, somebody may set a system and they will adhere to it. That's another thing. But if you remove all that, fundamentally what it comes down to is that power also needs money. You look at fame. People also are desperate for fame. And eventually, the money, as they say, money is sweeter than honey. So it's people can buy fame, people can buy reputation, people can buy prestige. You know, there are, for instance, all the biggest industrialists of the previous century and the ones before that, in the late 19th century and 20th century. Today, I mean, because Rockefellers or, you know, Rothschilds and the big legendary names 150 years ago, 200 years ago, if you trace the history, they are now called robber barons, because basically, fundamentally, it was a matter of greed, exploitation, and manipulation. And even today, it doesn't need to, we don't need to elaborate, but we read in the papers, not just in India, but everywhere, because this is encouraged. So this is what Narad Muni is saying, that actually the tendency and the desire for material prosperity, without the sanction, blessings, and guidance of Krishna and his devotees, it's actually a path to total disaster. And this pursuit, single-minded pursuit, can consume one so completely that we are not able to do anything other than that. And we don't want to do anything, because that becomes our main goal. Even sex, when we say that that is the biggest bondage, but today the money is finally, you don't find this so much in the, or you hardly find in the lower middle income, or in the villages, or in the smaller towns. It's primarily among the rich and super rich that people are actually buying. For instance, they may do it in a sophisticated way, but you hear a 95-year-old man marrying a 29-year-old woman, or vice versa, 55-year-old woman having a boyfriend who's 25 years old. It's difficult to believe that it can be a very strong emotional bondage at the service of the Lord. It's more likely to be that there is some mutual benefit, and then they have a prior agreement how they will share their wealth, so that before they enter into a relationship, what they call prenuptial agreement. We also see in the matter of, you know, sports, which is today consuming, you know, so much of interest. But that is the money power. People, it is, it drives people for success. That if any sport, whether it is athletics or whether it is gymnastics or whether it's, you know, cricket or any, the money is the, because the minute you get that, the fame and prestige and everything follows. Endorsements follow. People would like to associate with their products. Recently, only it was in the papers that they were giving the last year's total remuneration or salaries, a total amount of money earned by sportsmen. And the top five sportsmen in the world, they earn anything between $55 to $100 million a year, which means you're talking of 250 to 500 crores per year, the top five. And the top Indian, our cricket captain, he earned 125 crores in 1 year. So we can see that that is a tremendous amount. So everything, your actions are also tailored towards that. Even it is because you want to create a perception in the eyes of the people, because they have to see you in the good books. So it does. It's nothing to do with what you are. It's nothing to do with what your Paramatma is actually watching you do. It's nothing to do with your behavior and your beliefs. It is more important that how society sees you, and if you have been given the blessings of the Lord, some talent or some creativity, some genius or some bright spark which you want to exploit, so that it becomes valuable, it becomes there is a monetary worth to it. So everything finally dovetails into money, and this is where we are constantly reminded by Narad Muni that we have to be very careful. And in this pursuit, as soon as so therefore, if we can see that if we have been given the, by sheer causeless mercy, which we have had no desire, no burning desire to understand the philosophy, no burning desire to transform our life, or to at least make an attempt to transform our life, we can see that given this opportunity now, understanding through this philosophy, you cannot even calculate the immense tragedy if after knowing all this, which is coming after we don't know how many lifetimes, that we actually go the other way. And Krishna, by his causeless mercy, is so kind that once having turned to him, he ensures that you come back. How? Because even if you turn your face away, even if you want to go the other side, it becomes very difficult. You are miserable. We have heard this repeatedly, we have read this, and Perhaps you experienced it also, that if you try to move away from, for a devotee to move away and try to lead exactly the same kind of life or similar life to what he was doing, say before he came an association devotees, it's impossible. It's just not possible. Externally, there may be some trappings of, you know, doing this activity, that activity, but because he knows too much, he understands. You cannot blank your mind. You've understood, so therefore, even you may be pulled this way. The laws of karma pull you this way, that way. But you know, the philosophy is very clear. So these laws of material nature, if a devotee will understand, try to understand how they work. Just like in science, we learn that what goes up must come down. Every action has a corresponding reaction. Equal and corresponding reaction. So the laws of karma are also something which the devotee, what we are taught, and should be taken very seriously, because that explains many things in life. A devotee understands the awareness, or we see that this pursuit of sense gratification is one, but also if somebody is born with a disfigured body, somebody is born with a lot of riches, we can understand that this is past activities, past karma, the past words or deeds which are reflecting. But also what we do now will determine the future course of happiness or distress or misery in the future lives. So having, and then it also explains, which actually completely bewilders the greatest philosophers. They cannot understand, but even a devotee of any genuine devotee of any sampradaya or any religion, if he understands this principle of how the karmic reactions work, he understands that when he sees some very cruel and ruthless people are prospering so much, you know, their criminal activities, and they're still prospering now, and we see pious people, good people, they're suffering so much, and we say, is God cruel? But then we can understand. But this is not understood by some of the most academically brilliant people. But they cannot understand that, because they're trying to speculate in their own minds, which we can understand if we go through the Shastra. It's very clear that this is that we have to bear it. We have to accept it, and we have to. And it is more difficult to accept happiness and prosperity. That's an even bigger challenge. If one has been given, because that, after having got this, and then if we were to try to leave this, would be a great tragedy. Prabhupada gives a very nice analogy to explain this. You know, for storing grains, there you have the silos. So a silo is where you store the grains. So let's assume that you have some bad quality grains, rotten grains, which are actually filled up, let's say, substantial level, and then you start putting the good quality grains. So eventually the bad quality grains have to be consumed, because there's no way you can access the good quality till the bad quality grains are consumed first. So it will take you whatever time it takes. So bad quality grains or the rotten grains are compared to the bad activities. So you have to suffer the consequences, and this is over lifetimes. This could be over many lifetimes. So till you suffer and consume the bad quality grains or the bad activities, then only the good qualities will come. And it could be vice versa. So if somebody is, right now the way we see things, factually everybody is in a miserable state, whether they accept it or know it, because this is Kali Yuga. But in Kali Yuga, in that state also, when we associate with Krishna and his devotees, his paraphernalia, then we understand, we get a glimpse of the spiritual world, and we also get a taste of it, and at least it is convincing enough to try to, then it depends on our sincerity whether we do it momentarily and then give it up, or we increase it, and or we actually go to the full extent and try to build our life around it. And then all our life, whatever that number of lives are there, whether it's 50 years, 70 years, 80 years, in whatever health, mental condition, we see that we pursue this in this knowing that it's life is going to end sometime, and let me do it in the best possible way, knowing that there is a continuity of action. This karma tell you that there's life after life after life after life, and that Krishna is in control. So now this life I am understanding, which I probably didn't know, or we don't know whether we understood or not in the past lives. So therefore activities during this life can push us, propel us to such activity that we hopefully can please Krishna and his devotees. And actually then if Krishna chooses whatever way, once we come to him, then there's eternal happiness. So this is where if we see this perspective, then you know, even if we have enormous troubles and difficulties, we can see that what is it compared to lifetimes and lifetimes, millions of lifetimes, perhaps millions of lifetimes may have gone by, and now in this compared to that, a few years is nothing. So a few years of struggle or challenges, but in the right consciousness, is actually a great bargain compared to what we are talking of millions of lifetimes. And some dimensions which could explain, you know, sometimes you may think that millions of lifetimes, I mean, I don't even know about one lifetime, what about millions of lifetimes? But if Krishna can have, you know, in this area, this much space, millions of living entities, or if we say that there are billions of universes coming out of the pores of Lord Vishnu, so ultimately it comes down to reasoned faith. If you accept that, you accept that he can do anything. And there is umpteen number of examples that we can just have to observe by the thousands when that we see how from a seed the tree grows, or how from a semen how the body grows and how it's protected, etc. So there are so many ways. So if we can see that there is someone who's a perfect creator, how the planets move in the orbit, there's no accident, we never hear of. We constantly hear of railway and bus and road accidents in spite of doing whatever, I mean, in our own pathetic mindset as a human being. But here we never hear of any that there was some constellation clashes or something. It is perfectly designed. The sun sets, rises. So if we understand that, then we can even understand that he has set this in such a way and we only need to follow it. And he is so compassionate that he is extending himself to giving, you know, we just need to take one step and he takes a thousand steps towards us. So, it's a great bargain for us. So, basically, this civilized human beings are meant to lead a life of shreyas, not prayas. Prayas is an animalistic life where you do it instinctively, you do it immediately, you live what you want. I want this now, I want to do this. I must have this and I will do everything to procure that. It's very short term, it's highly self-centered and it's immediate. You just want it now. You don't even think actually. So if you talk of wisdom and intelligence, this is intelligence to understand from the eyes of Shastra. Not intelligence, somebody has three PhDs and got an MBA from a big prestigious university. It is completely, and if this, even after all this, if they cannot understand the basic principle that there is not a single person who has not died. When you talk of struggling and spending hundreds of billions of dollars to prolong life from average age, life expectancy from 70 to 80, and that too keeping them alive in many conditions, and the quality of life suffers, and then they're put in old homes. But on the other hand, we don't understand that ultimately 80 or 90 or 50 or 40, everyone finally dies. So there is a 100% death rate. There's no question of that. So once we see that, then we can see that the real intelligence is that I put my effort to see what I can do to, if I've given this opportunity, let me grab the best opportunity. Just like somebody gives you an investment tip, and you think that you know, this is, it's a certainty, and let's assume this is usually in material world it is said like that, but never actually is, but let's assume that it is 100% certainty. I mean, it is as sure as, let's say, the sun is rising tomorrow. We know that's certain. If someone gives you and you would say no, I don't want it, nobody will do that. They will just grab it. So in the same way, this is a certainty that, you know, that life is going to end, and there's also certainty that there's a controller, and what he wants, he's giving out of his innate kindness, he's extending himself so much, in spite of him being infinitesimally larger and we cannot even understand. Not even the greatest saints can understand, not even the demigods, nobody can understand who the Lord really is. We can only understand some aspects. In spite of that, he comes down, as a Paramatma is guiding us, takes us to the right person. If we have a desire, he'll guide us to the Guru. And the Guru, who is in complete connection with the Lord through the Parampara, also helps us. So this is something which is a certainty, and it is a best investment. It's an investment of putting a few little effort initially. Once you get the taste, and then you start on that path, and then even the difficulties are transformed. So the difficulties coming are no indication of when we see someone, a devotee, when sees someone suffering, that is not an indication of saying that whether he is lucky or unlucky. It is also not an indication of saying he is very spiritually advanced or he is not. It has no connection. Whether he has 15 Mercedes or whether he has 25 mansions, it is no. We have seen in example after example, Queen Kunti's example in the Mahabharata or the Pandavas, Prahlad Maharaj. I mean, so many examples who were great devotees, personalities who suffered a lot, in spite of the Lord being right there with them. Right there means actually physically face to face, guiding them. But they had to go through the quota. Of course, in their case, it was an example that has gone through history. So for us to all be inspired of. But they all had to face their challenges and difficulties. So when we have difficulties or challenges, first of all, we need to recognize who's causing it and what is the intent. And the intent is always that there is an opportunity. Every problem is an opportunity. You know, every problem, no matter what. It may be a death in the family, it may be, but so many devotees' lives have changed because they've had a sudden and major calamity. And that calamity completely transforms one's life. And they look back and say, if this had not happened, I don't think I would have come to the temple. This is a routine statement we hear. So, many have experienced this. So, which means we all can take increased faith in the words of the Shastra. So, and also knowing, the Shastras also tell us, the scriptures tell us that sense gratification or the pursuit of that, because of the conditioning we have, may taste very sweet in the beginning, but eventually it binds us. You know, because in the material world, the three modes of material nature, they are like binding us like ropes, and they drag us from one inclination to another, one inclination to another. So we are just like bounced back and forth. So we understand that it is eventually going to end in poison, because we are going to be bound further and it would be destroying us. While life of Shreyas, which is actually meant to control our senses and understand that we need to take a life of tapasya or austerity, which may be difficult because we are conditioned, so we have to change and mold our life, which is possible because so many people do it. It may be, but eventually it is giving us peace and happiness. And so therefore what tastes like so-called poison in the beginning is nectar in the end. So so having understood all this, then the next step, finally, we have to do it. Each individual has to do on himself. As they say, you can take the horse to the water, but you can't make it drink. Only the horse can drink the water. You know, you can make all the arrangements, but finally it is for us to do that. So in this mentality, whatever activities we do, even if we are covering by... we also need to understand that when we look at the Lord's kindness, the Lord's mercy, compassion on us, it is of such a nature that whatever activities He is giving us, every opportunity, and in spite of us rejecting Him, He still keeps us, gives us help to every help. He in fact, He does everything to see that we can come back to Him. So He may give us, in His compassion, He will actually, He fulfills our desires. Like in Dhruva Maharaj's case, he had his initially his thinking was of revenge. He came with a strong desire to extract revenge and to have dominance on the material world. But his desires got purified. So he fulfills the desires, but he also, if he's extra compassionate, special compassion is when he actually takes away everything. Now in Dhruva Maharaj's case, it was a bit in reverse, because in the beginning he gave him dishonor, or he Dhruva Maharaj started out with as a prince, a young boy, when he was when he left home out of sheer humiliation, and he felt that his honor was he was dishonored, and that is worse than death. But because he followed the instructions of Narad Muni, who became a spiritual master, and because he followed the process of devotional service very faithfully, in meditating on the Lord, worshipping the Lord, chanting, etc., his desires got purified. So either way, the Lord will, out of his compassion, he will extend himself to do whatever he can. He helps, and there are many, many cases full of this, that he goes out of his way. But in our perverted thinking, without Krishna or Krishna consciousness, our understanding of compassion is very different. Our compassion, it could be with expectations. So when we look at charity, or when we look at any act of kindness, if we de-link it from the Lord, eventually it will be either on a subtle or a gross level linked to our own extension of our own sense gratification. So that is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, and says about the charities in the mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. So if you do it with expectations, or if you are doing it for indirectly or directly increasing or encouraging a life of sense gratification or animalistic tendencies, or going away from the Lord, then it may be charity. That means you are giving something, but it is actually not charity, because in the real sense, it is not compassion. So we also need to understand and not be self-satisfied that, therefore everything has to be seen from the eyes of the Shastra. Srila Prabhupada would often say about, and this was a very bold statement when he called the modern education slaughterhouse education, and that shook people. Many people said, you know, how is he commenting like this? But what he meant, he always said that, see, any education which is actually not having any direct or indirect Krishna consciousness should be rejected. So we can see now that anything, ultimately reading the Shastras, understanding the philosophy is also education. And if even the academic pursuit is done in that atmosphere or with that intent eventually, that it can help us, yes, to have a occupational need is by itself not bad. There is nothing wrong with that. But if that is single-minded pursuit in the eventuality of getting just pure sense gratification only, then actually that education, if it is actually taking us away from the Lord. And we see today that there is so much of corporate philanthropy. The largest corporations, etc., they now talk of corporate social responsibility, etc. But so many people will be spending billions on education. Because if it's education which is going to, what is education doing today, the modern education, the modern civilized world, this civilization, it is actually increasing our propensity for sense gratification, directly. In fact, it is the only goal that they teach. Today's education only teaches us eventually. So it is either subtle or on a gross level. It may not talk only of monetary, though most of the time it is about how you can increase your job quality and income levels and all. But it could also be on a subtle level of power, prestige, fame, adoration, reputation. So one way or the other, there is no mention of, and it also makes us very selfish, because it only talks of us, I, and anything that is related to me. So it could be an extended family. I may be doing for my family, but because pleasing my family pleases me, so it is an extended sense gratification. I may be doing for the community or for the nation, but eventually that is what we call the extended family, because it pleases me. I am creating my own world, And in that, this makes me happy. So it is me versus the Lord. Eventually it will come down. If you put the Lord in the center, there is no place for me in the center. I can be in his lap, but I can't push him out. I mean, I can push him out. If I push him out, that's the only way. So there is two ways. Either I push him out or I join and sit on his lap. So if you sit on his lap, means we surrender. We accept what he says. So that is the two choices we have. So Prabhupada's explanation was that if it was a warning that we need to be very careful of when we go, and sometimes even devotees, when they, for their families and others, when we go for higher education, it is certainly going to help us. And if we have the devotional links well, strong, there's no difficulty, because then we can, so many bright students have been, by the thousands, have actually been joining, not just in Mumbai, but tens of thousands all over the world. But if they've got the strong roots in Krishna consciousness, then whatever they add, whatever they, Krishna's given them the talent or the capacity to understand, they can do so well. You know, whether they're professors or whether they become academicians, they become research scientists, or they go to some other any business, or start their own industry, whatever they do, that pursuit will help them if they have kept this grounded. But if afterwards it weakens, then it is becomes very dangerous. So this is where we have our own individual challenges. And if we are always in association and guidance, then it is not so difficult. So if you compare this with Srila Prabhupada's own life, how he was living also, and how he, because he was also a businessman, but when he, and he pursued this, but he always kept Krishna consciousness and preaching at the forefront. But when he, his business fell apart, his immediate reaction was to laugh. Oh, when he just got a wire, telegram saying that everything is gone, is burnt and finished, you know, his, because he immediately saw it as Krishna's mercy. So he was his own consciousness was always trying to link everything to Krishna, so that when such a calamity happened, which completely finished his business, he took it as Krishna's mercy or Krishna's guidance to him, and took it from there. And even after he went to the West, we know how he went on by Jaladut, and he had such difficulties with no money. He went there. When he came back, he had thousands of disciples. He had 108 temples. He never changed. He didn't change at all. He was the same. There was no ego, because he saw this as Krishna's arrangement. Just like Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, we can see that he was, his desires got purified, and eventually when he was, when the Lord, Lord Narayan was giving him everything he wanted, and he considered, Dhruva Maharaj considered this, what he was originally desiring when he was being offered, he said he felt that this was like pieces of glass, broken glass. And he felt ashamed. Even after the Lord gave him, because he was such a exalted devotee and he had such proper mature consciousness, the Lord gave him made him the emperor of the world for 36,000 years. But he, even then, in his humility, he felt ashamed to accept it, because he felt that, how did I ever have this kind of desire? How could I have, you know, even had this desire to ask, even though he was 5 years old? I don't think we worry about what we thought of at 5 and 7, but you know, that was his consciousness, even after he became the emperor of the world. So just like that, you know, so he never changed. Prabhupada also demonstrated he never changed. He was always conscious of himself as a, and so he gave the example of a perfect Vaishnava, that he was always conscious of his role as a servant of the servant of the servant, trying to just help his spiritual master. From the age of 26, when he met his spiritual master for the first time, till the age of 81, when he left this world, his only priority, highest priority, was how could I serve my spiritual master. So that's why his the first canto of the first book of Prabhupada's Lilamrit also talks about the lifetime in planning, preparation. So even though his spiritual master left the planet in 1936, and he went to USA after almost 30 years. But all those 30 years, it's not that he tried everything else and then because it didn't work, so they said, well, let me try this. No, we can see constantly he was trying to preach. He went to Allahabad, he started the League of Devotees. You know, he made efforts to, even when he was a grihastha, and then he made efforts to go to, when he took vanprastha and he went to Vrindavan, started writing. For several years he was writing. He was completely poor, totally poverty stricken, no money at all. Actually, my family is very close to one wonderful Vaishnav saint who left this world some years ago at the age of 94. But so he, when I asked him, he actually, because he was also staying in Vrindavan for many years, and he remembered when I asked him probably in the 90s, I was saying about Prabhupada, and he said, yes, this Bhaktivedanta Swami, he remembered. So he was saying that Bhaktivedanta, what he remembered was that in the late 50s, early 60s, that's the time when he spent time in Radha Damodar, he said, you know, because, yes, this Balramji Maharaj, his name was from Lodra, this is in Gujarat. So he was from Rajasthan, but he had, so he was into Ayurveda, then he used to grow these herbs himself. So he said this, Bhaktivedanta Swami, when he once had a severe toothache and he had come to me and I had given him some medicine. And then he had one, he said, I just remember one thing that in his, like all sadhus, when they stay there, he was writing inside all constantly. So prasad was generally put outside the door and then they would take whenever they had time. But he said, I remember that for sometimes it used to be piled up for many days. And we used to wonder that, you know, well, he's not even opening the door. So this he told in the 90s about what happened in the 50s. So this is one aspect, it just gives us a glimpse of Prabhupada, who was always peaceful, very happy, planning to go to the US, had big aims, and didn't matter, bother about himself. So we are coming in this parampara, in this lineage. We have been given this opportunity, which is something completely out of this, out of our imagination. So there is a purpose to it. So we have to try to constantly in our pursuit of our day-to-day activities try to understand the actions that are happening to us as the drama unfolds of our life. Try to understand what Krishna wants from us, what we should do, how we should react to it, and when we are in doubt we can take consultation. But we will find that by acting in the proper way, even if it is not palatable to us, eventually we will see that actually it strengthens us. It's just like how metal is tested, you know, only if it's a precious metal it will stand the test, like if it's gold or silver when it is actually put under extreme heat. But when we see that it passes through fire. So in the same way we can see this. So these are the examples with Prabhupada, Dhruva Maharaj, Bharat, brother of Lord Ram, such a glorious personality, you know, I mean he was given it on a platter. And he didn't make a show. Initially, people didn't believe that. Did he actually reject it? Was he feeling extremely? He was so upset. You know, we see the words he used against his own mother, and he disowned her, and he was completely shattered because his brother was his life and soul. But one would have thought that eventually, okay, even with a heavy heart, he would accept the rulership and continue. That even then, people would have not put him in a bad light because it was not that he created it, and nobody would have doubted. He went to the forest and we know how he insisted and he pleaded and in one sense he actually won the day that he convinced Lord Ram that he should come, that he should be the ruler. So on Lord Ram's behalf he took his padukas and put it, and then he for the rest of the 14 years he actually ruled as if the Lord was in the center. So like Dhruva Maharaj, like Prabhupada, he never changed. So he did his duty. He did his duty very well. But keeping in mind who was in the center, his Lord, his worshipable Lord Ram. And he, in fact, because he knew Lord Ram was sleeping on the ground, he dug a hole which is even lower than the Lord. So that was a sensitive consciousness that every moment that how much he would be suffering then, and I am enjoying, how can I be enjoying? So this is the kind of consciousness which is of such acute sensitivity that their body is here but their mind, heart, soul is completely in Krishna. This is what we talk of Krishna consciousness. It's a word we use commonly, we're Krishna conscious. Actually, Krishna consciousness means we see how deficient we may be in that we are not able to think all the time. But at least if we are given opportunity, the 2 hours a day when we are chanting and we try to concentrate on the Lord's name, that is an opportunity, or we are doing some service, that is an opportunity. So we do get these connections of opportunities to get connected to the Lord. So how we can improve that, that is the starting point. Whatever we are doing, even if we are coming to the temple, that is a start. Not everyone gets the desire to come here. It is open, the temples are open, all the temples in the world are open. Why people don't come? And if they come, do they come only with a material motive? That they are in a desperate situation and they come to pray that, please solve this problem. And then afterwards we may stop coming. Or is it that we actually are coming, once we come here, we like the atmosphere and we want to know more. We appreciate some devotees, we appreciate some other people's attitude and we want to be like that. So these are the thoughts that should actually govern us. Then we are a little safe of not being called by Narad Muni as atheistic fools and rascals. And also we should see, you know, that sometimes people feel that when we look at today's world and say that there's so much of bad activities and so on. But if things run smoothly, we might be feeling that fine. Everything's fine. But if Krishna is not in the center, whether it is run smoothly or not is not a question. After all, people don't realize that in Ravan's time, in Hiranyakashipu's time, in Kansa's time, the material prosperity was fantastic. So if we are talking of GDP growth of 10% and 12%, even if you go to 25% a year, we will still be better Ravans if you don't change the consciousness. So that means we should understand that economic activities, whether, so we may say if corruption is not there, is life going to improve in the real sense? Yes, in one sense that our pursuit of sense gratification might go faster, because money going to only 100 people may go to 1 million people or 2 million people. But if our conscience doesn't change, we are going to be where we are. We'll still be atheistic fools and rascals. So our observance of activities around us should not be governed by anything other than the Lord. It is not to consider that we are superior and all things we just criticize. No. I mean, we actually, I can say for myself, and many devotees also probably feel that we are very fortunate. We are very fortunate, we are very grateful that we don't know why we've got this opportunity to at least make an attempt. And when we do make an attempt, we actually find pleasure. We actually find admiration, pleasure, we find conviction. Because everything is consistent. You know, what you see, what you hear, I mean, and if it's done over 30 years, 20 years, it has to be perfect. How can it, there's nothing else that can be so consistent. It's impossible. It is not mechanical, everything is dynamic and yet it is consistent. There's nothing which is dynamic which can be so consistent unless it is absolute truth. So this actually gives us the conviction, and that conviction enforces our desire, determination. We become a little more convinced and we continue further. So I'll stop here, and if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer. There are no questions in Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki. Oh, sorry.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for a wonderful class, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, actually we mostly focus on the consciousness when we talk about transforming a person. But here we are talking about an external situation, that a matter of poverty or prosperity could help a person to advance or to degrade. So how do we understand this? Whether really in that sense one should become poor or one should accept a life of poverty for advancement, what exactly does it mean?
Actually, Prabhupada said that the poor people, means who are materially poor, they are poor, but the rich are even poorer. So it is really the consciousness which is really determines how we look at it. Because as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport also, that if we understand that everything comes from the Lord, and we are going through the karmic reactions, somebody may have some quota of happiness going on or some material prosperity. But if he misuses it, he'll be in tremendous anxiety. He will be in great... just this morning, one devotee, knowing that I was giving class, he sent me an SMS just half an hour before I sat down. He said, the three things which you can recognize, three symptoms of a person in a corporate world. One is that he is stressed, one is that he is depressed, and one is that he is well-dressed. So, you know, externally you can't make out. Everything is looking at, you know. So actually we are talking of the poverty of the consciousness. But at the same time, externally, because our consciousness is determined, if we are conditioned and if we continue to keep Krishna away, then our consciousness is in pursuit of what we think is happiness, which is actually taking us down the path to hell. And that's what we were talking about, the various examples. So ultimately for us, we need to see that whatever situation is, if we have been given something, and everything is temporary, if we've given something, it may increase, it may decrease. 30 years ago and today, it's not exactly the same situation. We can see whether we were in Chandigarh or whether we were in Mumbai, whether we were in South. I mean, our positions may change, our company may change, our family situation may change, our happiness, distress, all these things keep coming. In that, the serenity comes from understanding that whatever the Lord is giving, is we have to accept it. So, not to get carried away in distress and not to get carried away in happiness, not to get too depressed or too ecstatic, knowing that everything is temporary, and but more important is that, can I bring consistency to my life? So, in that situation, our being wary of outside world is important only to understand that we don't repeat the same mistakes. That we have been given some understanding and that we don't reject it. While somebody who's not been, who's unfortunate, who's not been given a glimpse of Krishna consciousness as yet, then he or she may be looking at it purely from one conditioned look, that this is my path to happiness, which we know is completely faulty. So ultimately it's the poverty of the soul or the poverty of the consciousness, which actually is more in with those who are more affluent. And this is what Narad Muni is saying, that actually those who are more affluent, and we actually see today, though this was billions of years ago, but we see that it is more today than ever before. Just two statistics can tell you this. I don't know how many people are aware that it's very interesting to note that India's population is 1.2 billion. And only 100 people, the top richest 100 people, the total assets of that 100 people equals to 1/4 of India's GDP. So can we say that there can be happiness in this? How can it be 100 people out of 1.2 billion have assets equal to 25% of India's GDP? There's something wrong. And on the other hand, you have 250,000 farmers who committed suicide over the years. You can see in the same country. And talking of consciousness, like in the United States today, it's the richest country, there are the maximum number of billionaires. And today there's a raging debate because, you know, there is such economic problem, so they're talking of increasing the resource base. So the average tax rate, the highest tax rate is 30% or 31% for the richest person. But actually, the richest people, the billionaires, they actually pay a tax of only 15% because of the many breaks that they get, tax breaks. So there's a big debate as to, somebody started by saying that why don't we, we should increase the tax. And there's been a furor, and it is actually brought it off the center stage. Can you imagine the richest people to give more than 15% to plug those gaps and to pay a normal 30% is unacceptable for the richest. That is the consciousness. Imagine if you have 10 billion or 20 billion and you are not asked to pay more than others, you are asked to pay what others are paying, not less than that. That is not acceptable. This is the consciousness. So that we can see that the mentality can completely change, transform our whole life. And we actually believe we are correct. It's not that they all believe that I am a demon, unfortunately. No, they actually believe they are fully correct. They take pride in it. They are convinced. They're completely convinced that this is the way. And what is the answer that such a person would have? Is that, well, that's the only way, you know, if you let the, you know, each one for himself, you know, I have created my own path of success. And therefore, let him create his own path. Let him get educated. Let him take an opportunity. Let him come with an invention. Not knowing that the series of complicated circumstances that Krishna has put in somebody's life may have brought him an invention and or something which has made money. Everything, the timing, I mean, there are zillions of things would have gone into that. What was his parents' life and how he was conceived in this life, and then because of his karma, he's getting that. If you don't see it that way, then you will be thinking that I am completely in control of everything, and therefore I am in control of how I use it. It's for me to do it. Have I answered your question? No. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, we say that we have to change our consciousness by chanting and associating with devotees and reading scriptures. We all know that Krishna is the greatest devotee. Means he is Dharma himself, religion himself. And he said that even devotion, there are certain limitations. Like in the scriptures, there are various examples. Like Tulsi Maharani was also a great devotee. And she was doing a lot of devotion, and she was made into a sapling, a plant. And besides this, there's also an example of Bali Maharaj, who was giving charity to everybody. Come take. Lord came and said, no, nobody is more charitable than me. So even devotion also, there are certain limitations. We cannot cross that limit. So can you please explain about this?
No, I'm not clear of the question. So it's a devotion is what?
I mean, we say that we have to devote, like chant and change our consciousness. But there also the limitations is there, no? We cannot do that, no?
Like, why?
I give the example of Tulsi Maharani. She was also a devotee of Lord. She was made into a sapling plant.
No, so we are talking of changing our consciousness in whatever we do. Yeah. So there is no limit to that. It's we continue activities, but our consciousness, you know, we can, because we cannot say that we have reached the perfection. We see from the lives of pure devotees, they always thought that they are actually at the most fallen. They actually felt, because they thought everybody else is greater than themselves. And that's the nature of a pure devotee. So actually while we are not in that level, so when we understand the path and we are pursuing that to try to reach those levels constantly, there's no limit to what we do it. Why should there be a limit? There's no limit of time. It's only the mental blocks are only our determination. The determination or the courage or the conviction that differs between us and a pure devotee to completely have 100% you know, think alignment of thought entirely with the Lord. As we said that should we quote to Srila Prabhupada or Dhruva Maharaj, whose thinking was completely entirely moment to moment only with Krishna. And in Tulsi Maharani's case, I mean today, every day, all over the world, hundreds of millions of people are worshipping Tulsi Maharani. So, I'm glorifying her as a pure devotee and praying to have the same kind of desire as her. And only by pleasing her, we're saying that we can get at least a drop of her devotion to the Lord. So actually, we can't judge externally. That's the whole point of today, that we are not judging externally. What we need to see is, we have to concentrate on ourselves, and our consciousness is really what is our battle is what we see. What we see outside is to protect our understanding, not to criticize, but we need to be aware. Devotee must be aware of what is happening so that we don't get carried away. There is no, you know, we can't say that, well, I was not aware or I was innocent. No. We have to be, aware or shrewd enough to understand, and the best is to follow the education of the scriptures, which actually contains everything. All our attributes can be developed to perfection by following that, and there is no limit. The limit is only our own effort that we can put, not only effort but our determination finally.
One more like Sardin scripture, even Vishwamitra Muni was a great devotee, yogi, and he was controlling his senses with a lot of austerity. But then Indra sent this Menka, the Apsara. So here also he was doing devotion, he was doing austerity. But still that's what I mean, the limitation is there. No, we cannot go beyond a particular, the demigods are there above us, the higher powers are there who will not allow us to reach that level. No, that's what I want to say.
So in Vishwamitra Muni's case, like also in Indra's case, we have many examples where great devotees have had difficulty, but that is an example for us to follow. And Vishwamitra Muni, Indra, or the story of the Brahmin or in Avanti Brahmin, people who were who could change their life. So Valmiki was one. So in Vishwamitra's case also, I mean, ultimately, that is for the whole history to understand that it's not a matter of limitation, it's a matter of he was following the path of meditation. And he was meditating for thousands of years, but he got distracted. So it was to prove the point, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that mere meditation is not, especially in Kali Yuga, is not recommended. That if you follow a life of devotion, after all we've had we have examples of Haridas Thakur, which is only 500 years ago, who was Lord Brahma himself, who was given all the temptations and never deviated. So any example that comes of a great devotee or a personality like Indra or Vishwamitra Muni, are actually, that is the reason that Krishna puts that to, for us to understand that even they could be, nobody can be relaxed. Everyone has to be very vigilant. That way, devotional service is like, walking on the, it's like the thin edge of the sword. So, if you are a little bit careful and careless, we can get cut. So, that is to prove that. But eventually, if they're sincere devotees, then they will take it, it was a humiliation also for them to be written in history for eternity. But at the same time, their happiness at the Lord. Why? Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma also. I mean, they're used as examples by the Lord. But they're actually very grateful for the Lord. So, that's not putting limitations to us. That actually encourages us to follow that path, knowing that that is the only path available for us, especially in this age. Any questions? So, Linda, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.